across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Now, if you're one of those people who don't like me doing weather reports, just cover your ears right now. It's pretty spring-like here. It's early evening time in London, and it's cloudy, a little bit of sunshine lurking behind the cloud, and it's reasonably warm. So I'm going to take that. Thank you very much for all of your emails recently. I've had some nice ones, just a few of them. Andy in the UK, thank you very much. Sarah, I think it's Sarah in Montreal, Canada, thank you very much. Teresa in the US, or certainly has been in the US, listening to me a lot in New Mexico. Len in California, thank you very much. And Jeff on the Wirral near Liverpool, thank you. And that's just tiny, tiny fraction of the people who've been in touch. Thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster, for his ongoing hard work. Remember, my website is theunexplained.tv. My Facebook page is the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Very busy time this one way and another. And I've got something really good for you, I think, this time. Darcy Weir, investigator, director of excellent video material, documentary material, has come up with something that I think has needed to be done. And this is a documentary about the phenomenon, going back in history and right up to date, of USOs, unidentified submarine objects, transmedium craft. The documentary title is Transmedium, Fast Movers and USOs. It features an awful lot of people who've got first-hand accounts to tell. We're going to hear some of the soundtrack, if Darcy's okay with that, and also tell the story of what these things may be and what they can do. Because I think you will find that it is a remarkable story and one that as yet remains truly unexplained, hence its place on this program. So Darcy Weir, I say program, you know, podcast. Darcy Weir is going to be here, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Thank you very much for being part of my show. If you've donated to the online version of this show over the years, thank you very much. You do know who you are, and it means a great deal to me that you do that. And, you know, that we still have a place and we're still relevant in 2024. Who would have thought that 18 years ago when I sat here and started doing this? And, you know, overcame all of the challenges to actually establish this podcast. So I'm not going to say any more. I don't think there is any more to say, to be honest with you. So I'm going to cross right now to Darcy Weir. We're going to talk about USOs, transmedium fast movers, and those kinds of topics, which often appear in the news these days but don't get adequate explanation. We're going to try and delve into the topic, do a deep dive quite literally into it, see if we can come up with at least some questions to ask that might take us forward. Okay, let's get to them now. Darcy Weir, thank you very much for coming back on my show.
I'm so happy to be here, Howard. Thanks for having me on.
This, I think, is a documentary that needed to be made because it's a subject that makes it into the papers here on a fairly regular basis now, but not a lot is being written, not a lot is being made about this. Why do you think that so few attempts have been made to do a deep dive into this subject? Pardon the pun, it's a pun that appears in your documentary anyway, but, you know, why do you think so few attempts have been made to do a deep dive into this issue, which seems to be quite important now?
Yeah, I think, recently I was having a bit of a conversation on Twitter, which is, sometimes can be a vile place to have a conversation, but somebody pointed out that, you know, why are we talking about USOs? Because it's just part of the phenomenon to do with UFOs. And essentially, they're the same thing. It's a unidentified flying object that has gone into a body of water of some kind, right? But I don't think anybody has done a deep dive on it because we've just been obsessed with the idea that whatever is piloting these crafts or whatever is behind the phenomenon must be from outer space, must be from the atmosphere, you know, entering our airspace. Those are the most famous cases that people have talked about, you know, Maelstrom Air Force Base, where out there near you in the UK, Bentwaters, with the rental shum incident, UFOs buzzing around our military installations and possibly harassing our personnel on land, as well as just experiencers, abductees, people that have seen UFOs or met the entities that come from these things. Usually it happens on land, right? But this documentary, I just wanted to sort of unveil another layer of this phenomenon where maybe we're looking in the wrong direction. Maybe we should be looking down into our oceans, because it seems like these craft definitely have sometimes come from there. You know, the origins seem to be from our Atlantic, our Pacific, our Arctic. Some people say the Antarctic. All around there, we've got deep oceans that are vastly unexplored, unmapped, and they're very unknown. So I think they're a great place for us to discover more about these UFOs, in other words, USOs, unidentified submerged objects.
Do you think it's more comfortable for people to consider UFOs because we can then think they appear in our skies, then they probably go away? But if you're talking about USOs, you're talking about something that's from inner space. It's here. It's, you know, it's in our oceans, if we follow that line of thinking. That, in a way, is more threatening and more challenging, don't you think?
It is. And there's, you know, two sort of thought leaders that have touched on that idea that there is a non-human intelligence that has existed here on Earth, possibly in our oceans and, you know, underground for a long time. And, you know, if you speak of Hal Puthoff, he wrote a paper in the last few years called The Ultra-Terrestrial Theory, where he says maybe some of this non-human intelligence is a crypto-terrestrial, something that's not human, but the oceans could be a great place because 71% of the planet is covered. Humans seldom go to the oceans. I mean, we take a dip and we look around a little bit, but our militaries are more active there, and commercial, you know, ocean-going vessels are going there, but we're not going very deep. We're just riding along the surface. And Tim Gallaudet, who is the former Navy man that I featured in this documentary, he was a rear admiral for 7 years. He was the chief oceanographer out of a 32-year service with the Navy. And he is very, very well educated in what is possible in our oceans and what is going on in our oceans. And he illustrates quite clearly in the documentary that we just don't know enough about our own oceans. And I don't know if that's by design, by the powers that be, or if we just haven't spent enough time to really look into this and find out what's down there. You know, so what he's written about quite recently with the Soul Foundation participation that he's been actively a part of. The Soul Foundation was set up by Gary Nolan and I believe David Grush initially with a bunch of other people. You've got Jacques Vallée part of it. And Tim Gallaudet wrote this paper about why our oceans should be a main focus for scientific discovery, as well as looking at the UAP issue. And in that, he highlights that only 25% of our ocean bed, the floor of the ocean, has been mapped, and less than 25% has been mapped with modern technological means. So we really embarked in the 1800s on ocean floor mapping, and you know, we've been changing our methods ever since So we should really update that, and we should know more about what's down there. And then the ocean volume, which is, you know, the actual levels of ocean going down all the way to the abyss, we know a lot less about too. That's mapped about 5%. So it's pretty incredible when you look at that in the modern day of 2024. It leaves a lot open for interpretation. And when you hear about USO encounters with submarines, with Navy vessels, aircraft that are being intercepted to, you know, make contact with these craft that are literally coming out of our oceans, it makes you wonder what is really going on in our oceans.
And it makes you wonder why we're not investigating them if we're not more assiduously. If you don't mind, I've got a short clip of Tim Gallaudet, because he is the plank around which your documentary is quite rightly built. I mean, he was a great, as we say here, booking people, he was a great get for your documentary. You know, he's a terrific guest. So I've got about 60 seconds of him talking, and I just think it's important to hear a bit of the man himself. So this is from the documentary. This is Tim Gallaudet.
And during 2015, the Navy was conducting a large exercise off the U.S. East Coast involving the USS Theodore Roosevelt. And I received an email on the Navy's secret network, and it was from my boss at U.S. Fleet Forces Command, the operations officer that worked for him, two-star admiral, overseeing this exercise. And the title of the email was Urgent Safety of Flight Issue. And in the body of the email, he was very brief and said, if any of you, and there were about 20 other admirals, one and two stars addressed, that were under the U.S. Fleet Forces Command, if any of you know what these are, tell me ASAP, because we're having numerous near mid-air collisions and we might have to cancel the exercise. And attached was the now famous and leaked Go Fast video.
Which, apparently, have I got this right, was wiped subsequently from his computer. There was a piece of video he talks about that he had, and suddenly he didn't have.
That's right. So the Navy, their internal communications, whether that's like an instant messaging app or email, all goes through this secure server called IPSEC. And he declared that the next day, I mean, he was really curious about this object, the GoFast UFO video, which, as you know, NASA really heavily tried to debunk in 2023. They wiped it from his email server, and therefore it gets taken off of his local computer, probably like Microsoft Exchange. And so no one talked about that afterwards, and he found that to be really strange, because he really wanted to understand more and find out if, you know, this was a, it sounds like a more common occurrence than the public really knows, that the Navy's being buzzed by these things. And, you know, as he said, it is a safety of flight risk, right? It's a safety of flight issue. And this speaks to what Ryan Graves has been really trying to push for in terms of commercial and military aviation safety with regards to the UAP issue. He thinks that we really should understand more about the UAP phenomenon so that our skies are more secure and there's no collisions and threats.
We have to remind our listener that Ryan Graves is one of the people, including Dave Grush, but he was one of the pilots, the F-18 pilots, who gave testimony at that July hearing last year, July 26th. And I don't think any of us expected him to go into the shocking detail that he went into. But, you know, he's very much on side with this, wants to know more about this. Back to Tim Gallaudet, though, because there are a number of things about him just from the get-go here. I'm amazed at his candor. I'm amazed that he wants to talk in this detail about this. He makes it clear to you in the documentary that this was never discussed among admirals. He would have meetings with senior naval people. And it really was, as we say here, hush, hush. People didn't want to talk about it. Does he give you a clue as to why there is this degree of secrecy in the Navy and how they're able to maintain that?
Yeah, I think it's a two-pronged thing. It's one, of course, is there's still a huge amount of stigma surrounding UAP, USO, or UFO, you know, encounters with our military. So servicemen fear the ridicule that may come with reporting something like that. So that's one part of it. And he definitely part of his messaging is he wants to destigmatize that because this is a wondrous phenomenon, right? It should be studied scientifically. That's another one of his serious points of contention surrounding the secrecy of this phenomenon. And the other thing is just the fact that the secrecy is built in by the Department of Defense for some reason. And he wants to get to the bottom of it. I think he knows that there are those that are part of these special access programs. And I've recently done some interviews, or he's done an interview where he actually said he's spoken to people that are in charge of one of these special access programs with the reverse engineering of a UAP. And he thinks that the DOD fully is aware of what these things are and what their origins are, but they don't want to open up those books to the public.
So he's talked about reverse engineering and that.
Yeah,
in his belief is happening. That's pretty seismic, isn't it? Are we going to be hearing more about that? Because I keep being told, I keep asking the question every week on my radio show, you know, what's happened to disclosure? Why are we not getting anywhere? We seem to be piling into it full steam ahead this time last year, roughly. Mm-hmm. And now we don't seem to be anywhere very much. And I noticed yesterday, the Black Vault published some information through FOIA requests, Freedom of Information requests, that apparently Arrow had tried a number of times, many times, to contact and have conversations with Dave Grush, and apparently, according to those, and I need to digest that material properly, they haven't been able to. So the whole thing seems a little stalled.
Well,
and it seems that people like Tim Gallaudet want to give it a bit of a push.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of people that want to give it a push, but you have to keep in mind two things. So first of all, with John Greenwald's Black Vault Freedom of Information Act expose on David Grush, and Arrow proclaiming that they reached out many times and they really wanted to interview him, but he kind of ghosted them. David Grush, as a response to that sort of scathing piece on him, he forwarded his emails where he, because Arrow didn't show those, he asked them to provide information, further information, regarding their access to security, secure information, and what they would do with the information that he gave to them.
Right. So was he trying to ensure his own safety?
He was trying to ensure that anything he gave to them didn't just go and get classified away. He wanted to make sure he understood their process of where the information was stored, what kind of security clearances they had, which, if you remember back in 2023, he even said, like, publicly that everybody found out that Arrow did not have the security clearance to hear the things that he could express to them, that he knew about the special access programs. So it was a bit of a like catch 22. Yes, I could go and you could interview me, but anything that I would be able to tell you would have to be in a skiff, and you don't even have the access for it.
Right, so I've got stuff to tell you, but you can't hear it.
Exactly. So he was kind of responding to that yesterday, and you know, that a lot of people missed that and went with the sort of you know, more negative press about that interaction sure. between each other. But I mean,
I'm glad that we've spoken about that, because that is the only detail I know of this story. And you've just told me every story has another side. You've just told me it.
Exactly. There's so much more to that. And I think David Grush he's waiting till he knows that when he speaks about his information that he's accumulated, that it will go to the right group of people that can then do something about it. And there have been meetings. I don't know if you've looked up all these skiffs that happened earlier this year, but I think about maybe even like 11 or 12 different congressmen. We don't know if David Grush was in those skiffs, but there was somebody speaking about classified UAP information. And those congressmen, you can look it up on YouTube. Just look up like congressman reaction after skiff briefing on UAP. And they look like they've all seen a ghost. Mm. Like they look shocked, they look distraught, they looked uncomfortable. And the first thing they say to the press when they walk out of that meeting is, "I can't talk about anything that was discussed in there, but there's definitely something to this phenomenon, and I think people should know more about it." And yada yada yada. So
what we're saying here, Darcy, is that, and you know, I think it was pretty interesting that we just took that little diversion here, and we'll get back to the USOs in just a second and Tim Gulladay. What we're saying here is that actually those of us who are looking from this side of the Atlantic saying, what's happened to this process? Well, this process is ongoing, and it's likely, it's possible that a dam will burst at some point, and we will get a whole ton of information, maybe.
So you're talking about basically this catastrophic disclosure that everybody's been kind of voting for in the UFO community, but it's not going to happen that way. In my opinion, it's going to be a drip, drip, drip process, especially if the DOD is at the helm. This is their baby. This is their, you know, they've controlled the truth on this for the past 8 decades. So why would they change that now? They're not going to, unless it's in their best interests. And, part of that could be that there are members of the DOD that are like you and I in terms of their thinking, or like Tim Gallaudet, that believe this issue transcends just the security of one nation, that it should be a new sort of zeitgeist that permeates throughout the world, and all people are conscious of not being alone in the universe, and that this could advance our thinking and scientifically push us to new boundaries, new frontiers of science. And I think that's why you have this sort of push and pull on the issue. There are certain people, obviously Christopher Mellon, Lou Elizondo, David Grush, like all these people that see the potential for this truth and how it could change the world for the good of mankind, but it's just being held back by some gatekeepers, by people that just do not want this truth to be out there. And there's probably some good reasons. Like I think catastrophic disclosure could be harmful to some degree for some national security issues, and possibly, you don't want your adversaries to know what you have. And I think some of these UFOs or USOs and UAPs could be our technology that we've reverse engineered.
But you think not all?
Not all. Some, but not all. Definitely not.
Right.
Definitely not. Yeah. I mean, like we were talking about the crypto terrestrial theory, or this ultra terrestrials idea that something is here that's existed for a long time. And you do have this idea that there's extraterrestrials, something from another star out there in space. And then extra dimensional beings. I mean, apparently we could have a myriad of phenomenon, and scientifically that could be possible. You know, what we're just not there in the mainstream. We're still dealing with this old Manhattan Project style of controlling the truth. You know, we had the Manhattan Project gave birth to project management that really allowed epic, huge bomb, monumental breakthroughs to happen, which the nuclear bomb was that very thing in the 1940s. And many of the people worked on different compartmentalized pieces to make that epic become a truth and reality, right? But it hasn't stopped. And we have all kinds of moving pieces and compartmentalized work going on for different types of super black and classified technology. And the threat to that stuff coming out is the fossil fuel economy and all kinds of mainstays that we've been keeping people employed and been running the planet with for centuries now.
So a few people, a lot of people maybe in the military industrial complex, whatever it might be, have woken up to the fact that if this stuff gets out, if it gets out in the way that we would prefer it not to get out, it is going to destabilize the world, not just on one level, but on many levels. So maybe that's part of this whole delay that we are seeing in this process, that a few people have started to think, geez, hold on, we're getting closer to this than we kind of thought.
Yeah, you're fearing that catastrophic disclosure. And I mean, layer that with the artificial intelligence that every person in the Western world has at their fingertips. If they have a powerful enough cell phone, if they have a powerful enough computer, they can install local AIs, GPTs, and they can program them, and they can access ChatGPTs that they can pay for that's more advanced, and they can build things incredibly fast. You know, we're talking about almost this Star Trek era that we're entering, where you say, computer, synthesize this for me. You know, we're at the precipice of that. Everybody's seeing the potential of AI taking off like that. And when you think about all of these alternate propulsion systems that have maybe been held back, these exotic energy systems that don't involve burning something or boiling something, if you start talking to AI about aiding you and assisting you in developing something more renewable and sustainable that is like off grid, that's destabilizing. One of the other reasons why you're not hearing about the UAP or UFO issue as much right now is because we're at the precipice of another world war. And that is taking the main stage of everybody's minds. And it should. But it's important that we're not destroying our planet and each other. But I really hope that we don't go to that level. I hope this backs off and there isn't this major lockdown of world security by the West. You know, we could enter this sort of 1984 dystopian future if there is a major attack, because then everything's about national security. And I've said this before, that's like the one thing that could really halt
everything.
All bets would be off. Air travel, leisure, everybody must be considered a threat to the state and to the economy and so on and so forth. National security when there's a major attack. And I said that would halt any progress in UAP transparency straight away.
Because it would just simply be seen as an issue that was too hot to handle. Yes, well, we know that, but also just not relevant to the current security situation, whatever that may be. Back to Tim Gallaudet then. He believes that these things should be discussed, and he talks about there was great secrecy. There has always been great secrecy, certainly in the Navy, about these things. one of the things I thought when I watched him speak, and he is so eloquent and so good, how is he able to do this? Does he have to get clearance from somebody to speak to you?
No. He's actually trying to reinstate his clearance right now because he's trying to get read into some other programs, apparently, to use that clearance to possibly get access to more of this UAP information. Excuse me. He spoke to me in a professional and a, let's say, inspiring way to discuss the issue, because he, again, is trying to engage this phenomenon to destigmatize it in the public so people understand there is something happening here. There are some real thought leaders out there that are interested in it, both within the Department of Defense as well as the mainstream scientific community. And it should be something that is discussed in the public and that we really engage in a serious way. And anything he's talked about is now declassified. I mean, the GoFast incident, when that first happened, if he discussed it in 2015, that would have been illegal. He would have gotten in really big trouble, you know, probably thrown in jail, as Mark D'Antonio mentions in the documentary. I asked him, you know, can you not tell me who the number two of the second in command of the Navy who told you about this fast mover program, which might be this program for cataloging USOs by Navy submarines and other ocean going military vessels. And he said, well, I can't tell you that because it's classified because of the nature of my trip and the work I was doing for the Navy. I can't talk to you about that. He couldn't tell me what year. He couldn't tell me which person. And I said, why? And he said, well, because I don't want to go to jail. And that's essentially what you're going to do if you break that oath.
But I thought what he did say was revelatory. And we can maybe get into that now. I've got a very short, I think it's about 18-second clip of him, if you're cool with me using this.
Yeah,
Mark D'Antonio, naval man. Astronomer, now scientist, I think, too. So a man who talks with authority finds himself on a submarine, and there is an incident as he's aboard. And it's interesting that he broached this incident, whatever it is that submarine that he was on encountered, with the captain, or certainly the person who was in command there. So let's have a listen to this.
He looks at me and he goes, D'Antonio, right? He goes, sir, yes, sir. He says, you having a good trip so far? Sir, yes, sir. And he goes, let's keep it that way. Okay. And he walked away. So I was like, and he said it in a nice way. He wasn't like, let's keep it that way. He said, let's keep it that way. And he turned to walk away.
He doesn't want to talk about it.
They didn't want to talk about it. And I thought, if I saw something on just one trip, it must be very common. So I started looking into it.
What a fascinating little scene, little drama. I almost visualized this thing in my mind, all the submarine movies that we've seen in our lives. This guy is on a submarine that encounters something that has all the hallmarks of a fast mover, goes to the captain and says, you know, what was that? You're going to investigate that? And he basically says, you know, silent soldier.
As stop asking questions, basically, and mind your own business. Mm. And later on, he does speak with the second in command of the whole Navy. And he says, sir, what can you tell me about the fast mover program? Because Mark had embarked on an investigation after that to find out what was really going on with these USO anomalies and how often they were experienced by other submariners. And apparently it's quite common. They're not always threatened by them. I did speak to a gentleman, Dr. Jack Sarfati. He said to me privately that there have been Navy engagements with these things that have been hostile. But he can't tell me about that because it's classified.
And when we're talking hostile, what's your understanding of that word in this context?
I think that Navy men have been hurt or maybe their lives have been lost because they fired on these things or they've engaged in a, you know, warlike way. And we're talking about something that's much more advanced than us. I mean, the submarines that we currently have in our fleets around the world can probably go a max of 40 knots in the ocean, which is about, I want to say like 75 or how many miles per hour is that? Let me just double check. 40 knots.
I was just about to do what you're doing, looking it up on the computer.
It is 46 miles per hour.
All right.
So it's not that fast. And, you know, you're dealing with the effects of ocean drag. Water is non-compressible. Okay. So when
if you go too fast, it's like a wall in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. And you're feeling that friction. If you're on water skis, you're feeling that friction on your feet. It's like you're sailing across a ground, sliding across the ground, right? So when we're in a submarine, we have very limited speeds. And when they're detecting Navy submariners or other folks on these freighters and destroyers, they can use sonar and they find objects zooming around the ocean at 300 miles, 600 miles plus. This is something that's outmaneuvering and outclassing our state-of-the-art ocean equipment. So unless it's something black, you know, a black project military instrument that we just do not know about yet, whatever it is, it's negating the effects of friction and the ocean drag around it. Mark D'Antonio talks about the Kluze-Klein particle in the documentary, and people look that up. It's something that's been theorized many, many years ago. And they're trying, you know, with particle theory, they're finding the Kluze-Klein now with these rotating particle reactors. What do you call, like, the CERN? That is a
collider.
Yeah. So they're finding all these other particles, and the graviton is something that they're experimenting with. And he's thinking that we might be looking at, with these new discoveries, the possibility of using gravitons to change gravity, to create little micro black holes. And if you had a vessel that could go through that, punch out of our dimension and punch back in, you would travel from point A to point B instantaneously.
That's why people give accounts, as you say in the documentary, of things appearing to shoot at incredible velocity upwards, and it may be just that they are technically able to punch in and punch out in that way in different places, but to our eyes and to our video, they appear to be shooting up or shooting down. So, Darcy, I want to bring you now to Richard Dolan, who's been a guest on my show, guest on many people's shows. Very respected investigator. I've got a little 15 seconds worth of him from the documentary, and this is the last audio clip that I've pulled from the documentary. But he describes what we've already alluded to, really, but in more detail, the deep secrecy around this particular topic. Listen to this.
Message that comes through over and over again is that the secrecy on these is very, very severe. Records get taken out, they get expunged, logbooks get switched out, and this type of thing. So there's a lot of management over the information with these things. And so almost typically, classically, the way these stories will come out is an ex-Navy guy, 20, 30 years after the fact.
Indeed. That is how we're hearing these things. That's how you're hearing these things. The interesting point with that is that it chimes exactly with the Tic Tac UFOs, the Nimitz events that made all of those headlines, of course, in 2017, years after the fact. And the fact that the tapes disappeared or were taken away. There are recordings of these things. That's not the only instance. Recordings of these things that are just simply disappeared. Crews come in from, you know, another part. People don't know who these people are. And they've got top security clearance. They take away the tapes and no more is heard of it.
Yep. It's the inside men in black, right? It's the men in black at work that are controlling the information, suppressing the information, and making sure that the public is just none the wiser, right, about the phenomenon. And it happens at all levels. You've got the Air Force OSI, Office of Special Investigations. They'll go out as a agent of authority to confiscate pictures, videos, and get information and testimony from experiencers that have witnessed UFOs or USOs. That can be citizens, that can be just civilians. The FBI can do the same thing. The CIA can go after people that are within organizations that should have some kind of security clearances. And they usually have confiscated stuff. I think it's Sean Callahan from the FAA that was part of the investigation of the Japan Airlines incident that was flying over Anchorage, Alaska. This Japanese pilot and his co-pilot were evading this thing, doing huge turns in the air. The object apparently was like the size of a miniature sun and emanated two smaller craft that were beaming their cockpit. Really troubling stuff that was well reported, well recorded, and the FAA was involved. And subsequently, those documents were taken by CIA. So you have all kinds of levels of intelligence and security that are monitoring the situation and trying to take this information away from people so it doesn't get to the public.
But and also making sure that nobody else comes out with similar things, because I think those pilots for a while were suspended.
Yes. And so, you know, that further adds to the stigma. So people just don't want to report this stuff anymore because they don't want to be penalized in any way for telling the truth. And so obviously people are tired of that. And you've got people like Ryan Graves, David Grush, and Tim Gallaudet, who have seen and witnessed this stuff from their own capacities, from their own different vantage points, but know that it's real and know that there's an active cover-up going on still.
I also like the way that you build into this some of the history. The fact that this goes back, well, in fact, there was a British ship in 1825 that encountered something as bright as the sun, a great big bright red-orange style object, leaps sphere. Out of the water. Yeah.
Yeah, a sphere. That was, yeah, an interesting case, one of many. As you may note, the British Navy was pretty much at the head of conquesting the world at some point in the past. And the navies really were kind of like our NASA, our military, I guess, point of the tip of the spear back in the day. And in the 1825, a ship was sailing from England to Hawaii. And when it was off the coast of the Pacific there, in the Pacific Ocean near Hawaii, they had this encounter. The naturalist on board that recorded it was Andrew Bloxam. You can look up his diary online and read it. And he recorded this encounter very scientifically. He didn't equate it to, you know, something spiritual or some kind of grand delusion. He just said this object came out of the ocean. It illuminated the whole deck of the ship as if it was daylight. It was the middle of the night or, you know, the morning. And you could see like a pin drop on the deck. It was that bright. And multiple crewmen were witnessing this. It went back into the ocean and came back out again. So it wasn't just one encounter. It was dual encounters with this bright reddish orange sphere that was illuminating their ship. So pretty interesting. And that makes you wonder what, again, is in our oceans. How long has it been here? And when it's linked to the UAP or USO, UFO phenomenon, you know, it can't just be our own equipment, our own classified tech, because we had nothing even close to that in 1825.
And right? we had nothing like that in 1954. You talk about the FDR, an aircraft carrier. That encounter, I think that aircraft carrier went on this amazing journey to get back to California. It didn't go through the Panama Canal. It went all the way around the bottom of South America and back up. And they encountered, if I've got this story right, a 100-foot-long cigar-shaped object close to the ship. The weapons wouldn't work. They were paralyzed. After that, two discs came out of the water. Then what may have been a bigger cigar-shaped object, or the first one, just simply closer, appeared, and the discs entered the cigar-shaped craft and then submerged themselves into the ocean depths. That's an astonishing story, that.
Yeah, absolutely incredible story. And there's probably so many more of those stories that have been suppressed, right, that have not been reported in history. I'm sorry if you hear that barking in the background. It's my dog. But essentially, there's the Delroff, USS Delroff incident that happened off the coast of Alaska, where we see a UFO coming out of the ocean. You also have Project Main Brace, or Operation Main Brace, which happened up in the north as well, near Alaska. Again, like, days of encounters with this 1950s carrier, battleship, pretty much out in the middle of the ocean. And many, many more incidents that happened when we just should not have had that technology.
There's a great story that you touch on too in the documentary about the Soviet era and their submarines being followed, something apparently also that blasted through the ice near one of their ice-breaking ships. There's another, you know, you talk about it in words, but you can see the picture.
Yeah. Paul Stonehill, who's ex-Soviet Union, ex-Russian, who now lives in the United States, he's documented a lot of this stuff that came out of the USSR era, UAP and USO encounters with the old Russian Navy. And I believe it was the former Russian general Vladimir Zaza that spoke quite candidly about these encounters and how the Russian Navy was very interested in the USOs. They actually tracked and tried to engage with them for decades. Secretly, this was something that was also kind of not on the books, right? And Vladimir Zaza said that this sort of sphere-like object smashed through the ice on one of their northern expeditions into the Arctic region, Arctic Circle. And, you know, people thought maybe it was some kind of projectile. It could have come from maybe a submarine, but he said absolutely not. It wouldn't have blasted through the ice. It would have exploded on the ice. And so this object went through the ice and then shot off into space. Pretty interesting stuff.
You talk about Canada's possibly finest strange incident of this nature. Now, I was actually close to that location on a cruise ship at the end of last year, and people were talking about it. And when we docked, I think we docked at Sydney, Nova Scotia, they were talking about the Shag Harbour incident, and they didn't know that I do what I do. They just, people are still talking about that. Yeah. 1967, strange craft, dome of light, that left behind a strange sulfurous film on the water. There may have been two craft, and I think if I got this right from the documentary, and I hadn't heard this bit before, divers who went down apparently reported some kind of what appeared to be non-humans. Is that right? Or have I got that wrong?
Yeah. There were reports. The divers, they were interviewed by Chris Stiles, who's actually the number one investigator of this in Canada. He's written a number of books and just released his newest book, Clear Sweep Clear 5. And that's regarding a incident that happened in 1960, actually 7 years earlier than the Shag Harbor incident in the Shelburne area, where there is also a naval base. Both incidents, when divers were scrambled to go down and intercept this object that was seen going into the ocean, because they thought maybe, who knows, this was a commercial craft or a military craft. There could be somebody on board that they could recover and help survive. Both incidents they went down, they saw something that spooked the divers. And Chris Stiles has interviewed the divers from the Shag Harbor incident. And yeah, they were really afraid. They did not know what they were looking at. They knew it wasn't human.
What was the incident where a naval crew went to DEFCON 1 alert level, which is the highest you get?
Yeah, that was the Shelburne incident in 1960. So right. Subsequently, after the divers went down and tried to intercept whatever was there, they came up, and in the ship's log that Chris got through a similar process of Freedom of Information Act requests in Canada, it says that they went to DEFCON 1, which if you look online, our Navy and the NATO's never gone to DEFCON 1 in history. So pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, what is it that can cause that level of alert to be triggered, I guess. You also talk, there is so much in this document, we'll never get to all of it, but 1971, an incident that involved a U.S. aircraft carrier, something hovering over the ship, another blood-red sphere, like the one that was reported by the Brits in 1825, but this one shut down their communications, effectively sealing off the vessel from the rest of the world. So the ship was on battle stations for 60 minutes, apparently, and totally unable to communicate. What a story.
Yeah, I think the major issue there is that not only are we getting outclassed and outmaneuvered by these craft in our atmosphere and our oceans, if we try to engage with them in any sort of hostile way, if you look at this anecdotal story, they apparently have the ability to shut down our communications, shut down our ability to even intercept them and take off with our craft, or to operate certain weaponry. So in other words, that vessel was a sitting duck in the ocean, and that's disconcerting. That shows that maybe our militaries of the world are just not at the top of the food chain.
Sure, but it also adds to the narrative that those in charge of information are maybe a little more reticent to let the information redisclosure come out. Because if that kind of stuff gets out, that there is a power somewhere, whether it comes from beneath the ocean, whether it comes from space, wherever it comes from, whether it generates itself interdimensionally. If it has the ability to shut down weaponry, which Robert Salas has talked about, of course, or has the ability to close down communications, you know, that's bigger than all of us. And that's the kind of stuff that governments will be very, very twitchy about releasing, because of the potential. If you let people know that there's a power that big, then number one, your power base, your authority is diminished, because it's a higher authority than you. But number two, that scares people. And I guess that plays into the whole narrative of why disclosure is so slow. I want to bring you forward to the end of the documentary, because I don't want to give away everything that's in your great documentary, Darcy. But 2021, Department of Homeland Security. I have a couple of guys who are connected to Homeland Security, I think, talking on a beach, if I got that bit right. It was right at the end of the documentary.
Yes.
And the leaked rubber duck UAP video, which involved, I think, it's a 40-minute video leaked from the Department of Homeland Security. Two objects, a head and a body. They call it the rubber duck because it's got a head. it looks like it's got a body. It looks like something that you would float in the bath, but much bigger. But they seem to be communicating together, traveling at an astonishing speed. And the kicker, whatever this is, seems to have some kind of propulsion, but it is not emitting any heat. That's a recent one, and that's a biggie.
Yeah, and it's been pretty well covered, actually. It was studied by the SCU, the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, which is a group of scientists that try to debunk anything like that as fervently or, you know, as possibly they can. And what you'll see in the video, it's still widely debated. You know, guys like Mick West say it's just a balloon or something. But the thing about that is that FLIR technician Dave Falch, he did an analysis of this. And with the FLIR system that was looking at this object for over 40 minutes, you know, if you think about the Tic Tac or the Go Fast or the gimbal UFO videos, these are very short. And we want to see more of that. We want to see longer footage to discern, okay, for sure, this is not something prosaic. Well, in the rubber duck video, it's so long, and the type of FLIR equipment that's focused in on it is recording its speed going against the wind above 100 miles per hour. And for anything like a drone that would be connected to a balloon, for example, and a balloon can't go against the wind, it would, you know, I've got a drone. I've used some of the shots in this documentary when I'm flying over the ocean to, you know, capture some footage. And those drones, the propellers create heat. They get quite hot. Sometimes it lands, you pick it up, and you're almost burning your hand if you pick it up wrong. Well, you would see that in a FLIR camera. You would also see the exact shape of the drone, which is something that looks a bit like an X. And this doesn't look like that. It looks like kind of two spheres commingled. Mm.
And there's no way that it can be some kind of video artifact.
No, it can't be, because they had visual, you know, like the pilots were tracking this with CBP, which is Customs Border Patrol that feeds into the Department of Homeland Security.
Did we give the location, by the way, where this was filmed?
Yeah, this was over the border of Arizona and Mexico, actually into Mexico. So it wasn't like they were actually following this thing off of American, like, territory with interest, right? And they're used to, you have to keep in mind, like, these agents are used to seeing things with their FLIR technology on their missions to protect the border. They're used to seeing things that they can identify. Okay, this is a cartel, let's say, manufactured object. This is, you know, some kind of illegal immigration convoy. These are people running across the desert. These are this is a car. This is a small plane, whatever.
Well, this was none of those things.
This was none of those things, and they couldn't understand it. And my friend, Andy Marcial, who gave that testimony, and he was actually responsible originally for leaking that footage, among others, that came from Department of Homeland Security. Andy, he's an interesting guy because he's also an experiencer. He's seen UFOs with his own eye up close and personal, like, you know, big disc-shaped craft. And Andy, because of those earlier experiences, wanted to create a social media platform that people who are also experiencers or like understand the UFO phenomenon and want to know more can communicate. So on Instagram, he calls himself NY UAP Discussion. And through that platform, you know, he's got like 30,000 followers. This DHS agent, this Department of Homeland Security agent, noticed him, saw that he did some good stuff, debunked certain things, but thought other things that were certainly credible were worth mentioning and discussing in terms of UAP or UFO videos. And so that agent reached out to him and said, hey, I've got some stuff I'd like you to look at. Possibly you would be the person to leak this to the public. So Andy thought, okay, maybe this guy's full of it. But when he saw the rubber duck footage, he saw the A-10 Warthog footage and the La Bruja footage, he knew he had something interesting here. And the Department of Homeland Security agent was very honest and said, we have this in our what the F folder at the Department of Homeland Security, where we just can't understand what these objects are. In other words, we've held it up to all kinds of things that we know we can discern, and this is really stumping us. So these are UAPs, these are UFOs. And the agent wanted to get them out there so that the public understood that there's a phenomenon that we're interacting with all the time, apparently, from different intelligence security agencies around the world that we don't understand. And then Andy subsequently took those videos. He wanted to release them very responsibly, you know, not just become world famous and rich or something, as some people may think, debunkers may think is the ultimate motive here. But he took it to the SCU, the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, and these scientists heavily scrutinized the videos. They were introduced to the Department of Homeland Security agent. They verified his credentials and saw that these really were leaked from that guy. And there you go. Afterwards, once they gave the green light to Andy, he released them, and people are discussing them today.
They certainly are. And in your documentary, they're very well explained. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be formulating their own questions about this and wondering what will happen next on, you know, those cases, that case. Lastly, yeah. In the documentary, there is the dangling question at the end, and that is the question of if these things, the UFO or the USOs, are out there, and if they're appearing from under the ocean, under the sea, whatever, there must be undersea bases. They must live somewhere. So that brings the question of what is happening off the coast of California, what might be happening in the Black Sea, the Bay of Biscay. The words that you use, or that are used in the documentary, are there is a global presence of something that deploys craft, if we want to call them that, from beneath the waves. And that is the most fascinating question of all. That's the one you leave us with.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to further study that in some subsequent documentaries. But I will say we do touch on this strange geological anomaly that seems to be sitting off the coast of Catalina Island on the Pacific side of the United States, California. So there's an object that, you know, if you go on Google Maps in the past, it looks like a big oval shape, and then it has like almost looks like columns underneath it facing out to the ocean, and like a big sort of space in between. This is near, I can't remember the exact location you would pull it up with on Google Maps, but after I released this documentary and Tim Gallaudet mentions that he wants to further investigate this and that he sent the coordinates to NOAA and had some, geological review of that and whether this would be a natural formation, the personnel he spoke to said that it's not, and that that's not normal. So then you have to wonder, is that a glitch? Is it just some kind of mapping anomaly? Well, in the past month, I think about 4 weeks ago, 2 weeks after the documentary was released, Google Maps updated that location and completely scrubbed this object from the seabed.
Have they been asked? I should be asking them myself why they did that.
People were outraged. It was all over Twitter. People were reporting, hey, this has been removed. There were video screen caps of the before and video screen caps of the now, the after. And actually, Tim Gallaudet chimed in on that when people forwarded it to him and showed him this geological object was removed. And he said, you know, even if Google Maps updates this and removes it, he says that he knows the USGS has maps of that anomaly.
Really? On,
you know, yeah, which is the United States Geological Survey, yeah. The scientific agency of the United States government. So he was kind of like calling them out and saying, you can remove it there, which is for the general public, but I know that the USGS has that object still there.
The mystery deepens. And of course, unless I've got my geography terribly wrong, that location is not a million miles away from the Pacific home of the U.S. Navy.
Yeah, it's not. It's pretty close. So who knows? It could even be some kind of strategic military base. I don't know. But it just seems strange, regardless what has happened recently. And this is also an area where these Tic Tacs and these strange objects have been noticed.
So is there
in the past decades
a presence of something that's beyond us? Are we cooperating with something? Are we monitoring something? Questions that deserve to be asked, and maybe in a part two of your documentary. I love this documentary, Darcy, even though I had to watch it at 1.5 speed to make sure that I saw it before we did this conversation.
So sorry about that.
No,
it's open to you to completely review more.
I think it's brilliant.
You checking it out.
And I think if there are awards for these things, you should be putting this one up for an award, because it's beautifully done, and I'm very pleased for you.
I really appreciate that.
It's called Transmedium Fast Movers and USOs. Where would we get it?
It's currently available on Apple TV, Amazon Prime in the UK, and I think places like Google Play, that type of platform.
Darcy, thank you very much. I always enjoy speaking with you. This one's been truly amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. It's been a pleasure, and I will continue to make more documentaries like this. If people want to check me out, they can add me to Twitter at Occult Journeys, Darcy Weir Films on Instagram, and my website is occultjourneys.com if they want to see the other films I've created in the past.
Darcy, thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too, Howard. Thank you.
Darcy Weir. Your thoughts on what you've just heard, of course, gratefully received. My website is theunexplained.tv. You can follow the email link from there and send me a message if you want to make a guest suggestion. Tell me what you thought of this edition. Tell me what you think generally, how your life is going. And thank you for the recent correspondence that I've had from people who've got, as I have, tinnitus. I am struggling with this at the moment, but getting a little bit of assistance with it. Thank you for your experiences. And a number of people have said to me, can you advise me? And the problem with tinnitus, that's ringing in the ears, noises that emanate from your head. Every case is different. Mine will be different from yours. So the only thing that I can say is please talk to your doctor about it first and start the journey to understanding this and hopefully getting some help. Okay, more great guests in the pipeline here at the Home of the Unexplained. So until we meet again, I am Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.